a work session in the Education Subcommittee of the Full Ways and Means Committee on Senate Bill 38. We're awaiting Senator Courtney, but Sue, would you tell us what this bill is about?
If it's Courtney's, I'm going to know.
This is Courtney's bill, yes. Okay, Sue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, it's my understanding that Senator Courtney is on his way, but in the meantime, I'll go ahead and discuss the amendments that are before you for Senate Bill 38, which, as you'll recall, would specify maximum enrollment for elementary, middle, and high schools. What the amendments do is they replace the bill, and instead of requiring specific school sizes, they would encourage schools to operate kindergarten through grade 5 schools that serve no more than 400 students, grade 6 through grade 8 schools that serve no more than 500 students, and grade 9 through grade 12 schools that serve no more than 800.
Does that mean that they can ignore you?
Essentially, what this does is it removes the mandate and just encourages schools to operate schools of this size.
Okay. Any questions for Sue?
So the amendments would take out the waiver because you don't need that. It's all permissive rather than mandatory.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Essentially, the amendment replaced the original bill.
Yeah.
And
took out the essence of your bill.
Yeah.
They just
gotten stuff.
Recognize Senator Courtney, please. Senator Courtney, we're in work session. We're about ready to do something to your bill. So tell us what you want done or what you think should be done. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
He's not sure he's in a safe place.
I'm not sure he is. Yes, he is.
That's a good
He knows he's off.
Mr. Chair, my name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator, and my district is 17, and that's Geyser and parts of Salem. And, this is my sign and die on this issue. There's only a few hours left for me now. And, I was asked to give the commencement speech. I guess you don't call it that. You do. I have to do the Western Oregon University commencement on Saturday. I'm coordinating the whole thing. It's commencement in the higher education world, but it's graduation for South Salem High School last Friday night out here. And, they couldn't hold it in South Salem High School. They couldn't hold the North Salem one in North Salem High School. They couldn't hold the Sprague one. We did it out at the LB Day Amphitheater out here, and I was asked to give the address. I'll never forget that because it was just staggering to me. Here I have the actual program, and I don't know if you want to look at it. There were, I think, 401 diplomas handed out that night out of 450, and you could still see the stack of those that didn't come. And I was talking to the principal, and he says next year it'll be about 2,200 students they expect at South Salem High School. And here we have 400 kids graduating. If you multiply 4 times 4, you come up with, I believe, 1,600. That tells me that probably when that class entered, we're losing at least, we know we're having a dropout of at least 25%. In addition, the next day, my niece graduated from Kennedy High School. Kennedy High School is in Mount Angel. Kennedy High School is a 2A high school, and it was just a... It was an emotional thing for me because, I mean, I didn't cry or anything. I didn't have a part in that, except be there for my niece. And that was 56 kids, 2A. And, I got to thinking, they call each one of their names even over in South Salem. I really respect that and admire that. They call each one of these kids, and I just really got to wondering, sure, they talked about the awards and everything that are in here that went to actually a very few percentage of the kids out of 450, as opposed to the awards that went to the 56. And all I'm going to say in terms of my amendment is all I use the word is encourage, and I've already spoken on this bill extensively. I assume you don't want me to do the testimony all over again. It's given about 3 or 4 times.
Please don't.
Well, all right, I won't. I understand your fatigue and your frustration with me, and this is my sign and die moment on this, but I cannot emphasize enough to the individuals of this committee, both individually and collectively, that the school size issue is something that's going to be there for all of us. And I know that certain districts, Senator Miller, for example, you get into Washington County and other areas, you just simply can't overnight say no high school will be bigger than 800, no middle school will be 500. I understand that. And Representative Winters and I are in an area where we're going to see a new West Salem High School open. And right off the bat, they designed it for up to 1,600. But the chair of my school board, when this bill was first heard, came before the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, you know, this is right. We should at least to the extent we can, consider these numbers and try to hold it down as much as possible. So all I'm asking this committee to do is to adopt the amendment, which doesn't require it. It does use the word encourage. That's the way I had to go on some other bills, like background checks for sports action, I mean, youth sports programs and things, and some of you were on the education committee that remembers that. So that's all I've got to say. It's over now for me. I've given it my best shot. I do think it's in the best interest of children if they can be in smaller units. I know Senator Troll last time, I mean, he was somewhat sympathetic, but he wanted to allow for those school districts that are already a certain size, and he did feel that perhaps under certain circumstances, certain schools could perhaps function in a bigger setting. But I'll just close by reminding you that even the great Milwaukee principal, Rex Putman principal, an extensive article him in the Oregonian a few months ago, extensive. His last quote was interesting. He's received national accolades. That school is only 1,350 versus many of the bigger schools going to over 2,000. Said, I'm going to have to retire. The job's just too big. This approach is too big. Now, he figured out a way to deal with 1,350 kids in a pretty constructive way. But even his last desperate moves before he retires, and I think he's retiring long before his time, are statements about the size. So I thank you for, again, even letting me talk to you. I really respect you, Mr. Chair, and the members of this committee, because every single one of you I have served with in some capacity, or at least you've tolerated me, and I mean that. I know some of you are pretty angry with me over certain votes, but there was a second vote involved that no one got notices they should have noticed, which I tried to bring over on Friday over here when everybody left the building to explain that I had done a second vote. I just thank you very much. As they say, the commencement thing, and I wish you could have been with me, at South Salem, LB Dale Amphitheater. By the way, North Salem is graduating in the Armory that night. Sprague goes to Willamette University indoors, and I could just go on. That's my area, but it's not alone in that area. They can't graduate within their schools anymore. They don't have big enough facilities. And all I'm trying to say is, I'm not trying to say South Salem isn't doing a good job. They're killing themselves in that high school doing a good job. And I compliment all the faculty had to wear, the higher ed's coming out. All the teachers wore academic regalia at this high school commencement. And I was so impressed. They made me put on a gown. Of course, I love to wear academic regalia. I'm an egotist that way. I can't wait to Saturday at Western Oregon to wear my academic regalia because it is unbelievably beautiful, my academic regalia. But the fact is, you know, they're working hard. I'm not convinced that all those kids that walked across that stage had an identity or an awareness or degree of confidence that I think many of the kids or most of the kids had at Kennedy, although I didn't interview them. And I'm just saying, it underscored again size. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I will get out of your hair. I appreciate you even letting me come in here and rant one more time. And, you know, it's over for me now. I've given it all I got. I've gone up the hill one last time.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Miller and then Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Courtney, can you tell me of other events besides graduation that require a different facility for the event, for the high school event, at any one of these high schools? Are the ball games all sold out? Are the band concerts all sold out?
Mr. Chair, I believe, Mr. Chair, Hart, Senator Miller, I believe the football playoff games, many of the track meets, the 1A, 2A track meet, 1A, 2A track, state track meets held at Western Oregon University. The playoff football games are being held at, they were held at Wright Research Stadium, they may have moved that, they're held at Austin Stadium. Those things come to mind right now, those kinds of things. They want to, all the 4A, types of things. I mean, no, I'm giving you, that's not a single school, but they're using other facilities than a high school to do those. I haven't actually gone and surveyed other kinds of academic or band or other things where they've actually had to use other facilities. I think there's some, but I cannot specifically note them for you.
So, I mean, if I understood what you were saying about size, you were suggesting that the buildings don't have the capacity to deal with the size they now have. But other than pretty extraordinary situations, I don't know if I'm convinced you made the case. I mean, yeah. Graduation playoff football is something else, and that's usually moved to a different venue anyway. But the ordinary Friday night ball game is probably, there's seats available and current stadiums and current facilities can handle it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, the principal informed me that South Salem's hallways alone, and the principal of Sprague High School has informed me, the principal of McKay High School has informed me, their hallways alone are not large enough to accommodate kids coming out of classes and moving from one class to another. The facilities on a daily basis are not large enough to handle the numbers of students that now go to our 4A high schools. They're not large enough. The Kaiser Middle School in Kaiser, Oregon, Whitaker, is not large enough. It hasn't been large enough. The Parish over here, this middle school over here, is not large enough to handle the numbers there in excess of that. So if the issue is, are the facilities large enough? I can tell you, at least in my school district areas, and I understand other areas, the facilities themselves are not large enough to handle the number of students they have to handle on an ongoing basis. The reason I used conventions was just to underscore the fact that, first of all, that many kids getting a diploma that night, I wondered whether or not, you know, there is a it reminded me that kids that go to Kennedy and then South, it was a dramatic reminder that, you know, that I think Kennedy is easily big enough to be handling their number of students. I do not think that South Salem High School, whether it's commencement or whatever, is a large enough school to handle 2,000 students. It is not.
Well, let me ask you this, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, follow up.
If the building was big enough, had additional classrooms, I don't know, bigger gyms, bigger stadiums, is your concern here that there is a size of school that becomes so large that it is not as personal experience? For example, the difference between going to Western Oregon University and the University of Oregon? Where you tend to be known at Western and at University of Oregon, at least from personal experience. I remember taking a class by closed circuit television. I'm sure the professor was pleased.
Senator Hartung, Senator Miller, at the risk of boring the committee, I will quickly outline the testimony that I give to the Senate Education Committee and to this committee. Overwhelmingly, the studies have been done the last 15 years when it comes to student morale, teacher morale, adult connection to the institution, academic accomplishments, disciplinary problems, dropout rates, safety and discipline, extracurricular activity participation is dramatically improved at the numbers that are listed in this bill, up to 800, up to 500, and up to 400. Dramatically, they have noticed that. So that's the reason that it isn't just facilities. It's the students' relationship to teachers, the teachers' relationship to the administration. Even in smaller schools, the teacher and administration work together much better than they do in the bigger schools. The dropout rates are lower when you get into the high school area. It's overwhelming amount of testimony and studies that have been done in the last 10 years to 15 years. The reason is, Senator Miller, and maybe this is the first time you've heard this from me, we made a decision after the Second War, Senator Miller, that bigger was better when it comes to school system. And so, in effect, we started to move in that direction. And in the result, though, we found out it's not in the best interest of kids in terms of size of the school. So it isn't just facilities. When you go to a big school, often, you know, the librarian, the custodians, many of those support people don't even know the students. Smaller schools, those kids do. It isn't just the teacher's relationship to a student. It's many of the people who are in a student, in a school on an everyday basis that relate to the student, that give that student an awareness, a feeling about themselves that's positive. That all is enhanced when your schools are not bigger than a certain size. Now, the college issue, if you want me to speak on the college issue, I can speak volumes on Western Oregon University for kids versus University of Oregon in terms of certain kids at the age of 18 versus certain kids at the age of 23 or whether you go to graduate school or not. I can speak volumes on that issue if you want to get into that. But I don't, I mean, it's up to you. I can speak really, but I won't do that unless requested to do so.
If I can just follow up with one comment. What I regret in this particular proposal is the fact that it doesn't couple this idea with a better student-teacher ratio within the building. And I don't know why it is that our education committees have failed to address that issue. I've introduced that bill I don't know how many years, and I can't even get them to encourage it, which to me misses the mark. I am certainly equally concerned with the size of the classroom, and probably think that's more important than the size of the total building that houses all of those classrooms. And I wish we'd pare down that student-teacher ratio. And this is fine, but I don't think it's the best product that we could produce.
Representative Winters, please.
Well, I would like to follow on a couple comments, since it's my good colleague from Salem.
Certainly.
And I noticed you changed to encourage in order to probably to get this through, instead of having the mandate there. I do concur with you that the size of the building, as well as the size of the class, has an implication and an impact on students. But are you encouraging us to grasp your last breath for signing die and pass out this bill? And I know you are, because I'm going to vote for your bill.
Let me just say something. You don't have to. I'm going to tell you something. I was here before, and I have great respect for each of you. Senator Trow made a statement about the size of schools, and he's right. He's not alone. I'm trying to reflect here, one size does not fit all, a philosophy which is promoted by a certain party more than another. I'm trying to be flexible here and allow a school district, and the part of education to understand at least, this thing in a way that they can live with. That's all I'm trying to do. And I thought, I already gave you where the 800 and the 500 and the 400 numbers came from. That's already been in my testimony. It's already on the record, right, in terms of that. And that's all laid out for you. So I tried to use the word encourage for that reason. My last breath, folks, hey, look, I'm here today and gone tomorrow, and nobody even knows about it. I understand that. So I don't know what to say here, Representative Winters. If you're saying do it for my last breath, no, don't do it for my last breath.
You mentioned a tiny die, so I just wonder if it was your last breath.
Senator Miller, I was there when you were on class size, but I'm going to tell you something about class size. We talk about the teacher, the teacher, the teacher. When my wife taught at Whitaker, then a junior high school in Kaiser, it was the biggest junior high school in the state when she taught at it, and it still is. She remembers the custodians and the librarians and many of those people at that time, where they took an interest in a kid. That could have as much impact on a kid's growth and awareness and feeling about themselves as a teacher in the classroom. We expect the teachers to do it all. So it isn't just a class size issue. I believe, Senator Miller, in my heart, if our schools are smaller, the class size issue would not only take care of itself, but all those other support service people and how important it is for them to be alive and take an interest in those kids would be enhanced as well. Because so many of these kids need those constant support coming, not just from that teacher, but from those other people that work in that school building on a daily basis.
Representative Hobson and then Senator Trow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say to the good senator that there will be a hole in this place when you're not here. You will be missed. It's not here today, gone tomorrow. We don't have to discuss that hole, but there definitely will be a hole. I appreciate this bill, and I think that the size limit is a wonderful idea. But as Senator Courtney and I have talked about on the side, in some ways it's impractical. And I say that I was in a graduating class of 970 in Whittier. My first year as superintendent in Detroit, we had three seniors, quite an adjustment, quite a change. And I've been in Juneau and Tillamook and a couple of other places since then, so I've seen quite a variety of those. And I do believe the ideal is probably 500 for a high school. And I'm certainly understanding and appreciate Senator Miller's point of view on the pupil-teacher ratio. It needs to be smaller. There's no doubt about it. However, all of these things cost money in a variety of ways that I don't need to explain to people. And I think that we're at a point where we absolutely cannot do it without looking at the big picture, where the money's coming from and all those things, and we won't necessarily get into that either. But I guess in summary, obviously I'm going to vote for this bill. The encouraging part of it is very weak, as others have pointed out, and I appreciate that. On the other hand, it does make a statement, and that's probably the best that we can do now. And in closing, I go with what Senator Courtney said. The most important thing here is the need to support staff. Staff are the critical people in a school, giving it the meaning that you were talking about. And I don't say this is a segue into the next bill, although it certainly will work for that as well. So I thank you for bringing it, and even though it's much weaker than you had hoped, I think it makes a good statement.
Senator Trow, and then Representative Close.
I wanted to say that I've had some experience in teaching in the secondary schools in Kansas and Colorado, and I've taught in three different secondary schools. One was a school of about 200 high school. Another was a school of about 65 high school students. And another was a school that was built to hold about 1,200 and had about 1,500 in it. It was really overcrowded. That was the Boulder High School in Boulder, Colorado. We were in the process, and the way you seem to get another school in a town is that you got to fill one up till it's overflowing, and you really have to deal with the extra kids before they get to build you another school. That's what happened in Boulder. They finally got around to doing that, but we had basically to go into three shifts, and we couldn't assign rooms to teach to many teachers. They had to just move from room to room whenever a room was available and so forth. And clearly we were overloaded with kids, no question about it. I think size does make a difference. I think you need to be flexible, and I'm glad you're encouraging it. I think we ought to aim at something, and I think this is good that we're aiming. I don't know about the 800, but I think in the quality education model, these are the numbers that are in that model, aren't they, for the size of the schools? And I think that's good.
Chair Hartung, Senator Trow, that is correct. I did not just pull it out of the air. I was very deferential to the experts and the studies and the people who have done the research in this area.
I think practically in large urban school districts where you never have enough money and enough voter willingness
right.
to provide all the schools you need, you're going to have larger schools. I think it's going to happen. But I think you're right. It's at the detriment sometimes to the best interests of the kids. So I agree with you.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Courtney, I would just like to follow your line of thinking here. Before the Water and Environment Committee, we had a bill, which I'm sure you're aware of, from Washington County, where they testified, I believe they said they had a middle school that was between 2,000 and 3,000 kids, which is just gigantic. But their problem in building is the land use laws, because if they're forced to build inside the urban growth boundary, it's over $300 an acre, and they weren't able to go outside.
$3,000 an acre.
$3,000, excuse me. At any rate,
$300,000.
If something like this were to be mandated, then it seems to me they're caught in a squeeze. Where do they go? What is your? Mm-hmm. How do you see this evolving? Where do these kids end up if they can't? If they're, you know, by money, they don't have the resources to build. Then what do? Bus them other out into the country? I mean, how do you see this evolving?
It's been a hard time, Representative Close. I'm very well aware of Washington County, because since I first gave my testimony, it was Washington County in particular that came on strong, saying that because of land use laws and the cost of land, house, etc., we couldn't get there. Other districts in other parts of the country have looked at this, have gone to existing old buildings, abandoned buildings with inside a school district to do some of that, or they've gone to schools within a school. There's no question the reason the word's encouraged there is in part because of Washington County. I'll be very frank with you, because their superintendent came after this bill with everything she had, one of the Beaverton School District. So this amendment is not only in deference to Senator Trow's remarks about the flexibility that you need in there, it's also in deference to Washington County and where we are on the land use laws right now. I think down the road the land use laws and the construction of schools are going to come into conflict in a way that some legislatures are going to have to deal with this issue for the reasons that you suggest, if we truly believe that we need to be aware of how large our schools get. So I think that conflict which is here is going to only get greater. Just be up front with you.
Thank you.
So that was partly why I did this.
We have some amendments we're going to consider. If you just hang tight there for a minute, if you can, or if you have other meetings to go to.
I don't like to run out of it, but I'm in the Senate Rules Committee, and you all know what's going on in the Senate Rules Committee.
Oh,
every
fine.
Bill that's been introduced is in the Senate Rules
yeah,
Committee. And I'll stay. Well, Senator Miller knows. I if you need me, I'll stay. If you want to
no, we don't.
I'm not,
because I think you'll agree with what the amendments say. Say, and just in departing, Peter, I'm not going to let you off the hook by you saying this is your sine die or your last...
My last hours. I call it my last hours.
That's your last hour.
My last hours.
But because you and I have been around here a long time and we're termed out at the same time, and I will not let you off of the hook. Even when our terms are gone, we have work we can do. And I'll just get it again on the record And I know this committee's tired of hearing it, and the education committee for the last 10 years have been tired of hearing of it. But I graduated from Jefferson High School in 1945, 56 years ago, 2,500 students, the same size as Westview High School in the Beaverton area now, and we were the best in academics and in athletics. Today, Jefferson High School has about 500 students, and based on our report cards, it's the poorest performing high school in the state, period. And there's 10 critical feeder schools there that, you know, send kids to Jefferson High School that can't even read, basically. And so, and Representative Winters and I have been working on this. So what I say, in addition to the importance of small classroom teacher loads, it's the community and the teachers and the parents that really give the kids an opportunity to learn. That's what this is all about, is creating an environment where our kids can learn. So anyway, you and I have things we can do when we're termed out.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say that, because you're the only member of this legislature that's ever said something like that. Most just want me to go, so that's very sweet of you, Tom.
Thank you.
If you may or may not have been, it's sweet. I mean, I'm not going to get emotional, but that's... You know, I don't use the word sweet when I talk to
man. No, I know. That's the first time I've ever heard you use that. I think I understand.
That's what it is,
Senator Miller.
Oh, no, sweet. Oh, I'll eat your donuts.
I think he'll be around because he's going to be promoting seismic retrofitting. It's kind of his lasting legacy here. But I would say one thing about Jefferson High School.
Yes, that's the one in Portland, Oregon.
I had attended there. I learned something here every day.
Who did?
No.
Who did?
And you mentioned how they were dominant in athletics.
Yes.
They certainly were for a long time.
Yes.
It should come as no surprise that a school that huge, similar to when I attended Beaverton, I still had about 2,000 students, I think. And we were really pretty good because we had a lot of people to choose from in selecting who would be the 5 on the basketball team and the 9 on the baseball, and 11 on football and so forth. What I do believe, because like Senator Courtney, I like athletic contests and what sports can do for a lot of our kids and keeping them connected. When you have a school that's maybe one quarter the size of Jefferson, there are a lot of kids who would have an opportunity to be a part of a team that, in my view, keeps them it teaches them responsibility for themselves when they are part of that team, to the extent you have academic requirements in order to participate. I remember taking around the card every week that said that I had to be current with my studies in order to play ball, and that was important. And to the extent we can further that experience and opportunity for others, this is a good approach.
And Senator Courtney made that point in front of the Substance Committee Education. Think about, you know, if you had 4 schools, 600 compared to 1 at 2,500, how many more kids have a chance to be competitive and compete? And I think that's a very important part of the education of our children, of course.
The principal of McKay High School said something to me once out here, McKay, that kids are involved in extracurricular activity, their dropout rate is the lowest, and their grades are often the best because of and extracurricular activity can mean many things. So yeah, I think it's critical to having kids involved. And, you know, if they feel like they haven't even got a chance. I mean, basketball, as much as I love it, it's not a much. At least football, their allegiance. Yeah. But so many sports, kids won't even bother going out. Yeah. They won't even bother going out. They figure, I can't even make it. Plus, there's not enough spots.
That's the one thing that has clung to Jefferson High School. Still a school of champions. Look at the basketball team this last time around. And I'll say again, I am proud to be a Democrat, a Jefferson Democrat.
Senator Harkin,
for the record. Mr. Chair, and I know that the males are dominating the sports issue, and sports is very, very important, and we were champions, but we also had an outstanding drama coach and teacher. I will not let that go unsaid because drama... And the theater is also a value in schools, as well as arts
and
the choir, and as well. So I think, and we're talking about.
I think we've had enough of this now.
This could not leave that unsaid.
Thank you.
This is the last. Move the Dash 1 amendment, please, to House Bill Senate Bill 38.
Yes, let's see. Senator Tro had a couple of good ideas there, and Sue, can you kind of bring this all together?
Peter, could you listen to this before you go? Because I wouldn't want to amend your bill, anything you didn't want in it. Sub 3, just in addition to section 1, we'd have a sub 3. The Legislative Assembly also finds that the student-teacher ratio is also crucial, and school districts are encouraged to conform to the student-teacher ratio recommended in the quality education model. Would that bother you?
No, sir. That's really remarkable.
Okay.
I showed you I don't have the depth I should have, because that's very good.
Right. What an admission.
Yeah. Peter, you need to work on your self-esteem and get some confidence.
No.
Goodbye. Okay, let's see. Sue, can you compile those? Excuse me.
I don't know enough about the quality education model, but I think it does make a statement and computes the cost based on student teacher ratio.
Okay, Sue.
Mr. Chair, what I would recommend that you do is go ahead and vote on Representative Schrader's motion to move the -1 amendment, then take a vote on the conceptual amendment that Senator Tro has recommended, and then everything would come back to full ways and means. It's a -2 amendment. And then you'd want to move the bill as amended to full ways
okay.
and means.
We don't have the printed -1 amendments, do we?
Yep. Mr. Chair, yes, you do.
How come I don't?
They were tossed out.
Oh, yes, they do. Okay. All right, does everyone, Senator, or Representative Schrader has moved the -1 amendments, 38-1. Is there any question about those? Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, they are adopted. And now a conceptual amendment, please.
Mr. Chair, I would move the conceptual amendment that reads this like this. It would be a sub 3 of section 1. The Legislative Assembly also finds that the student-teacher ratio is also crucial, and school districts are encouraged to conform to the student-teacher ratio recommended in the quality education model. So it's an encouragement for him.
Sue, will that show up as a -2 amendments?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The Legislative Council will combine both the -1 amendments.
Okay, is there any discussion, any question about the conceptual amendments? Is there
Mr.
any?
Chair?
Yes, sir.
I would have to object to that. Research has not proven that smaller class size leads to higher achievement. It does at the lower levels, not the higher levels. I probably object to that.
Certainly. Let the record show that Representative Close objects to the conceptual amendments that will come out as the -2. Is there any other objection? Seeing
I didn't want to object. Just want to thank Senator Troll for the inclusion of that amendment.
Right.
As I indicated earlier, I've been trying for a long time for that.
Right. Okay. So we have adopted those conceptual amendments, and so now we can. This has to go to the floor, of course.
Correct. Mr.
And then where does it go?
You'd want to make a motion to move it to full as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Representative Schrader has made that motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Ms. Where's that go? It's been in the Senate. Did it just go to the House after full?
Mr. Chair, it'll have to go back to the Senate so they can concur with the new amendment.
Okay.
So and it'll also obviously go to the House.
Senator Tro, would you carry it to the full, and then we'll have Senator Courtney carry it to the Senate.
Do you want to assign a House carrier?
And a House carrier, who would like to carry it in the House? Representative Schrader. And we'll conclude the work session on Senate Bill 38. And Representative Miller, or Senator Miller, thank you for participating today. You know, Jefferson High School.
You didn't know we were Democrats.
Okay, now we'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2286. Representative Schrader, this is your bill. Where are you going? Oh, you're going down there? Okay. Call on Representative Schrader. I thought you were leaving. Welcome to the committee, sir.
It's nice to See, so I've been observing your work. It seems to be exceptional. Sure, it will continue.
I think we'll pass your bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Representative Kurt Schrader, House District 23. I appreciate the opportunity to bring House Bill 2286 in gross to you. I'm also going to propose an additional amendment that would be a conceptual amendment, I guess, at this point. This bill had its genesis in my district, but I think it's a big statewide issue, as you know. There's over 50,000 ESL students statewide. Big shortage that we're all aware of, I believe, with the ESL teachers. There's an article in Oregonian the other day about the Salem-Keizer School District with Kay Baker talking, saying that the district has way too few bilingual instructors to give youngsters the support they need. Most students end up in English as a second language classroom. Most students end up in English as a second language classrooms with teachers who haven't always received ESL training. This bill originally was going to allocate some money to teachers, some money to school districts to advance instruction. The education subcommittee, in its wisdom, I think correctly identified that the real core issue is just what I've read, that we need better teachers that have a better understanding of how to relate to the students. And so this bill has been pared down dramatically to a $1 million allocation to assist in bilingual tuition reimbursement grants for teachers. The grants are available to school districts that meet one of the four criteria. 3% or more of the enrolled students are ESL. ESL or bilingual students are, come from have a large geographic area in the district, has a high growth of ESL or bilingual students in any given year, and can demonstrate extraordinary needs for the training of ESL teachers. Candy, my own, one of my districts back in my school districts in my legislative district, has seen a 14% increase, in ESL in the last couple of years. Estacada has a 5%, Malala is at 12%, Silverton's at 8%, North Marion 17%, Woodburn's seen a 60% increase. I mean, this is an issue that begs a solution. The bill as it's written now has a $1 million general fund allocation. I'm going to suggest that we delete that. Proposed amendment would delete the $1 million general fund allocation. It has come to our attention, I think, as a subcommittee, that we've got a lot of new federal funds coming into this legislative session. There's extra money for migrant education, for Eisenhower grants, for Title I monies, a number of different programs that I think we could easily find $1 million in there to fund this particular program. So a new section I would suggest should be added that says that allows the department to accept our standard language, gifts, grants, donations, federal funds for this program. Then there'd be a budget note in the department's grant and aid bill that would direct the agency to seek out these sources of federal funding for this program and report back to the emergency board during the 103 biennium as a result of their efforts. And I would ask your support, please.
Thank you. Members, I'd like to have Merced from the department come and Kurt, if you'd just stay there because we may have some questions. So, Merced, would you come and give us your opinion, the department's opinion, on how this could work or should work?
Okay. Good morning. For the record, my name is Merced Flores, Associate Superintendent of the Office of Student Services at the Department of Education. Good morning. One of the things that I thought about was how we could fund this program. And I know that there's always been an effort to use general fund monies to develop good ESL bilingual programs all over the state. And one of the things that we always want to be able to do is to provide every child with an equal educational opportunity as required by Title VI of the Civil Rights Law.
By what? Which law? Civil Rights Law?
Title VI of the Civil Rights Law, of the Civil Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we have not been able to do as schools, especially through the years, and if I want to, I'd like to just provide some history. In 1969, I came up to the state of Oregon. I was from California, a student attending a small private school. And as I was here, I remember there were very few Hispanic students in the state of Oregon. We had, I think our populations were in the Woodburn area, and there were sprinkles over in Ontario and Nyssa. But as you saw your population shift, we no longer were receiving those students, the migrant students from Texas and parts of California. This enrollment of students was coming from different parts of Mexico, and we started seeing a lot of more families coming up from parts Mexico, Central America, South America, and now we have probably one of the fastest growing populations around. Our schools have not been equipped with the necessary bilingual, bicultural ESL teachers to be able to accommodate this population. That's really been a challenge to us all over the state. And as a state, we have received additional dollars, Title I dollars, because of our poverty factors. Our migrant dollars are based on increasing amounts of migrant students identified. In fact, we are the fifth largest migrant education program in the nation. Also, our immigrant population has grown tremendously, and that's the immigrant population is separate from our migrant population. And that growth has been tremendously seen in Portland, Eugene, Salem, and parts of East County, of East Multnomah County. With those dollars, those increased dollars, of course, we've hired a lot more teachers, but again, we have not kept up with the training and also the efforts that we can make, you know, for teachers across the state. If we look at trying to use federal dollars for this effort, we will not have $1 million available. Now, as our Title I program, which is our basic program, which is our largest federal education program, we receive about $67 million, but we only receive about 1.5% for administration and school improvement efforts. Our migrant education program is only about $12 million, and we get 1.5% for our administrative efforts. The rest of those monies go to the districts, or districts to hire staff, to provide their own staff development, to provide teacher assistance for administration of programs. So very little of that money is used for our purposes to operate programs. As a state, we do receive a bilingual education grant, which is $100,000. Now that money I can use to hire a staff member, a consultant that provides staff development, helps districts develop grants to apply for more federal grants, and we are able to use those efforts for that. However, again, you know, looking at $1 million of administrative dollars that we would have at the Department of Education, and again, those that are tied to our federal mandates, we would not be able to have that money at this point.
Are you aware of Representative Schrader's proposed amendments? Are those satisfactory in your mind?
The amendment of being able to use federal funds instead of general funds, again, I would really be concerned about that effort. We would not be able to have enough federal funds generated this year. In fact, the monies that we have received from the previous year to now are not sufficient to even make up even half the amount of generated federal funds. So the amendment to change from general funds to federal funds would not be realistic.
Representative Schrader, would that be okay on your amendments if we left general funds and or grants and federal funds and gifts? Or
If I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, appreciate the Department of Education has had difficulty in identifying, I think, you know, the opportunities that are coming with the new federal money, which is $88 million. And even within the special ed, we've had discussions, I think, on our committee about how to allocate these dollars. And there's been a historical way to do it. And then there's the way to do it that hopefully has a little creativity that gets at base needs that the state of Oregon wants. I would suggest that to the extent I'd be more than willing to work with the department here in the interim to help them identify all sources of money. The language I would have says gifts, grants, donations, and federal funds, so we would not have to rely solely on that. But I suspect and would respectfully suggest that there may be some opportunities that if the department was willing to look at things in a slightly different light, there may be opportunities there. And certainly if there's not the money there, we would not do the program.
Representative Winters?
Yeah, just a comment. I wouldn't think that you would want to eliminate the federal language. Let's say, for example, that in one of my trips back to Washington, that one is successful for getting a grant from the Department of Ed for this specific purpose. So certainly we all know that the grantsmanship ability is out there in addition to those streams that are, you know, that could be coming through. I think that the we wouldn't want to box ourselves or restrict ourselves and not having that ability to pursue all of the avenues, which federal funding is one of them. I would suggest that we keep the federal language in there. But I do have a question, Merced. What efforts is being made by the district and with the community colleges of attempting to encourage them to do more training? Now, we've had this discussion before about the lack of educators that are available, and yet we have a natural, I think, resource in the state when we talk about population of encouraging those individuals to become proficient so that they can become teachers in this particular area. Is there any effort that the department is doing with our community colleges and looking and with teacher standards and practice with the idea that this could be a resource pool that we should be developing and working with so that we can fulfill some of the needs when we're talking about the second language issue?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, there has been some efforts by some community colleges to help encourage the enrollment of teachers or potential teachers, and also with systems of higher education. There's been several programs. I know that Oregon State University, we have Southern Oregon University, Portland State, Lewis and Clark, the four-year universities. But we also have had PCC, Portland Community College, that has put together a Portland teacher program that has encouraged kids from their high schools to the community college, to the Portland State University level, to encourage teachers to become classroom teachers.
I guess I'm speaking specifically of the Hispanic community itself.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winter, yes, there's been, the Hispanic community has been, in fact, a very much player in this whole process, because we have seen a lot more teachers come out of Portland State University, Oregon State, and also Lewis and Clark College. We have seen Portland State University put together a program called the Bilingual Pathway Program. And this is a five-year program that was, there were federal funds that were given to the university to encourage the enrollment and also the certification of bilingual teachers. We have, I believe, seven districts across the state that have taken advantage of this program. And I know that part of the responsibility of the district is to add to whatever effort the Portland State University grant has, but we have seen an increase in the number of bilingual teachers that are coming out of this program. So I believe they have maybe a couple more years of funding. But again, all those resources, and I really do encourage that we keep the language of federal funds and any other funds. I think my explanation was that certainly we just don't have the resources, but we need to be a lot more aggressive and get some of those federal dollars.
Mr. I follow up. I would like to really encourage this body to, when we start working on the higher ed, some of the budgets. This is a huge problem and a huge issue, and to me, I think that we shouldn't always just depend upon the federal dollars to get us there, particularly when we have a growing population of individuals in this state, and we know that we need the teachers, and we know that we need the resources. It just seems to me that our institutions of higher learning and as well as the department should be aggressively working to make sure that we are both educating and preparing more individuals to address this particular issue. And whether we take and put it in a budget note in these budgets, I for one, you know, think that here we have a natural resource within our state, and we're not reaching out to develop that very natural resource that exists within our state. You know, it's one thing to wait for the federal dollars to get us there, but I think it's another to do good public policy that says that we recognize that this is a valuable resource and we will develop this resource within our state, and I just had to add that.
Thank you. Kurt, does Sue have your amendments? We don't have the printed amendments, but conceptually, It's what you agree to?
Yes.
Yeah, Sue, would you read this, Chris?
Yeah, if I could just, if you would permit me to ask a question of Merced, Mr.
Sure,
Chair. I'm just
certainly.
Curious. There were a couple of federal grants, I understand, that were available. I believe they are competitive grants. One closed in December of 2000. It's called Training for All Teachers under Title VI. And one closed in May of 2001, called Teachers and Personnel. Can you share with the committee whether or not the department applied for those grants, if it was successful, and if you do get the money, how you spend it, or intend to spend it?
Okay, and this is, you're asking for Title VI dollars?
I believe they are Title VI dollars, and they're programs that are specifically targeted towards increasing the supply and addressing the training issues of ESL teachers.
Okay. Excuse me. Title VI is the Innovative Programs Strategy Dollars, and those are a different fund from your Title VII bilingual ESL monies.
I'm sorry, Marcia, I did misspace Title VII, not Title VI. Sorry.
Title VII, as far as I know, we did not apply for those dollars.
Can you tell me why the department did not apply for those dollars?
I think that we probably missed the deadline. I know that the dollars are available all the time, and there are different deadlines for different funds. There are deadlines for state monies monies that are available to states, and there's also monies that are available to LEAs or the local educational agencies. But we will keep, and again, those monies are available all the time. There are different cycles and monies available for those, and we will keep up with each one of those. I know that we have applied for a couple of dropout prevention dollars, and we're also applying for some other Title VII dollars that are going to appear in the fall.
Thank you. I would just add to that the two grants that I mentioned are available to, according to this information that I got off the Internet, both the state education agencies and local education agencies. So perhaps you'd like to encourage the department to seek out these new sources so that you're not diverting what they're already using from federal funds.
Is there a match requirement we'd have to use?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cho, I don't have that detail in front of me.
We'd be willing to make sure they had the match money. Mm-hmm.
So we could do that with a budget note rather than a conceptual amendment we're dealing with?
Mr. Chair, what I would recommend is that you... And I recognize we're not in work session right now, but
no.
You would...
Let's go to a work session and a closed public hearing. We're in work session now.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So the subcommittee. I'd recommend then that you adopt Representative Schrader's amendments, which would delete Section 2, which appropriates the general fund, and then it would insert a new Section 2 that allows the department to accept gifts, grants, donations, and federal funds for the program. And again, Legislative Council will adopt or draft the standard language, and then those amendments will be available at... Ways and Means Committee. And then, since you're not doing anything with the Department of Education's budget with this bill, you won't have a budget report in which you could insert a budget note. So I would recommend that you insert that budget note in Senate Bill 5512, which is for their grant and aid program. And that would be to direct them to seek out additional sources of federal funding. You could be specific in the budget note about some particular federal programs that you'd like them to look at, but I would also give them a broad category of other federal sources or other sources from federal programs to achieve the purpose of House Bill 2286. So I wouldn't limit it to just specific programs. I would maybe list a few, but then have a kind of a catch-all category also.
Is there any discussion or questions? Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regard to the federal grants, quite often the school districts actually interact with the department, and the department will say, Beaverton and Tillamook, why don't you go for that one? We're going to pass on it because you have to pick and choose because there's so many. But I think it's a wonderful idea to have a budget note in there encouraging, and I wasn't sure if Sue meant encouraging specifically for language issues or in general?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, in this case it would be specifically targeted towards the intent purpose of House Bill 2286, so the training for ESL teachers.
Great. Did you want us to speak to the bill, Mr. Chair, too? Or?
If you'd like to, certainly.
I'd be glad to get that back. Yes. I'm very supportive of this bill, and you probably noticed in the Associative Committee I did vote against it. And it's one of those cases of balancing flexibility, and I was listening to Sue also on that, balancing flexibility with the need for accountability, which is Senator Schrader's, or Representative Schrader's middle name. And I have learned from that, so I'm really happy to now support this bill because I like the specificity of it, that it's pointing specifically and totally to training of teachers. And I think Representative Winter's point is well taken, too, about the community colleges being involved, because what I envision is a community college online, a university, whatever, offering these classes, which most of them already do, but a school district then saying, for those of you who we will pay your charges for doing that, because there's a lot of teachers out there who want to learn Spanish, want to be able to help those kids a lot more, but they need some incentive and some compensation for doing that. So I think this is, it's a great one. Now, I had a little bit of concern about the federal money. I wasn't sure if Merced was thinking of the new federal money or the old federal money, and I get a little concerned about this new federal money that we seem to be spending in five or six different places, and I'm afraid we're going to end up with nothing there. But on the other hand, I think it's well written as it is with those choices, and I sure hope we can pass this now.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the LFO recommendation.
Yes, Senator Trill moves the LFO recommendations, and that includes the budget note on the grant and aid portion of the department's budget.
Correct, Mr. Chair, and members will, I will have that budget note language for you when we do the work session on Senate Bill 5512.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Senator Trill moves the amended 2286 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Schrader will take it to the full and to the House, and Senator Trill on to the Senate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other business to come before this committee? There is no meeting tomorrow. And then hopefully we'll be getting into our budgets on the next day. And no other business, we are...